EI and You is produced by PLS, a leadership and organizational development firm in Central New York, offering an array of services to affect both individual and organizational transformation. This series will explain why emotional intelligence is important from a leadership and organizational development perspective.
What we're looking for is this balance of achievement orientation right in the center. You know, you don't want too little, but you don't want too much as well.
And it's important to recognize that we all feel a full range of emotions. We want to mitigate the negative, disruptive emotions that get in the way of performance. We want to enhance the ones that contribute to performance, but we cannot pretend that both do not exist.
What is emotional intelligence, or EI, as it is often called, and how can it help a business improve its performance? What are the elements? How can it be strengthened? Welcome to EI and You. I'm your host, Mark Mangiacaro, and over the course of this series, we've been discovering the answer to those questions and much more. Joining me today are Ralph Simone and Cindy Massengill, experts in the field of emotional intelligence. Cindy, would you quickly remind our listeners what we mean when we say emotional intelligence?
The definition of emotional intelligence is our ability to have the awareness about our own emotions, so our self-emotions, as well as having the awareness about emotions in other people, so noticing emotions in other people, and then how we take action both on our own self-emotions and how we take action about the emotions as it relates to other people.
And there's four clusters to this, right, Ralph?
Yes, there are four clusters: self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and relationship management.
In our last episode, we explored a competency in the self-awareness cluster. Let's move over to the self-management cluster. I believe there's four competencies here. Why don't we start with the achievement orientation competency? So, Cindy, let's talk about what achievement orientation is and why it's important.
Sure, Mark. I'd rather start with the why first, why achievement orientation is important. Achievement orientation is important because when people feel like they have a sense of progress moving forward, they feel when they're strong in achievement orientation, they feel like they're making a difference. They're significant in some way. The work that they're doing is significant. They're making an impact in the world. They're creating some type of positive change. And when people feel these types of things, they're fulfilled in the work that they're doing. And that's why achievement orientation is important. So to answer your question about the what is it? The official definition is achievement orientation is about motivation. It's about setting goals. It's about proactively getting outside of your comfort zone to grow and expand. It's someone who is looking for ways to do things better.
Okay. This sounds like a particularly exciting type of competency, like a high energy, high achiever type person might really benefit from strengthening this competency. Can you tell me how it fits into the model? Aren't high achievers primarily focused on outcome with little consideration for the relationship?
So not necessarily, Mark. And that's a really good question. When we look at this competency, it's really interesting to look at how people show up on the scale of achievement orientation. It's either, if you think about a bell curve, it's either someone that's super low. They're low or they're looking to strengthen it. And if someone is in that bucket, we want them to look at things like how is their work connected to their values and their sense of purpose. And then on the opposite side, you might think of some people who are super high achievers where it's almost working against them because they're not open to hearing what other people have to say. So they're almost rolling over people, driving over people, right? So what we're looking for is this balance of achievement orientation right in the center. You know, you don't want too little, but you don't want too much as well.
And there's another piece of this that's the risk piece. So there's achieving goals, but then what is your tolerance for risk? And in the tie to the emotional intelligence model is to see how comfortable or uncomfortable people that you're leading are as it relates to risk. Because if you're going to grow your company, if you're going to perform at levels that, and sustain that performance, you need to take a certain amount of risk. And being able to recognize how people respond emotionally to risk is very important for any leader.
So how are leaders going to be able to get people to take those appropriate risks?
Well, that's a great question. I think part of it's creating a vision. Part of this spills now over into the relationship management cluster around being inspirational, right? Creating a vision that people can get really excited about, but also having the social awareness or the empathy to really read how people are feeling about the risk.
And it's also important to take a look at a couple other areas. What is the company's tolerance for failure? You know, what is an organization's openness to things not being done perfectly, right? Perfectly versus being fine. We had a client who said once, don't let perfection get in the way of something good.
Right.
Right?
I have a friend that always says, never let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yes. And a lot of times when an organization has a low tolerance for failure, it really hinders people's willingness to take risks.
So they think they're more achievement-oriented than they really are because they have to have all of the facts, all of the data, all of the analysis, and guess what? You just missed the window of opportunity to take action. And so I think some of the people, there's a self-awareness piece to this, that are you really as achievement-oriented as you think you are?
Without implying that the ends always justifies the means, does this competency appeal most to people who are comfortable bending the rules a little bit?
I don't know if I'd say bending the rules, but I think certainly hard chargers. I mean, when we do a group composite in an organization that recognizes that their performance could be stronger if they had higher levels of emotional intelligence, achievement orientation is usually high. You know, the score, when you take the group composite and you roll it up. So I don't think it's necessarily, bending the rules, but I do think, hard charging, high achievers often score well in this orientation, in this competency, but I think they do miss the risk piece a little bit.
And it's oftentimes you'll read in verbatim comments, and we're referring to the assessment that goes along with this model, with the emotional intelligence model. A lot of times when someone is super high on the achievement orientation competency, you'll see peppered throughout their verbatim comments by their raters, could listen more, right? Could be open to other people's ideas. So not always, but you'll see that. So that it goes back to that. We want to balance this competency because there can be a negative aspect to being super high.
Sure, they don't want other people to get in the way and slow them down.
Right.
Cindy, what is it like for an individual who scores low on this competency?
So usually when people score low on achievement orientation, it's usually because they're not tapping into what their true passions are. They're not expressing themselves either through what they're excited about or their values. There's a lack of connection between the work that they're doing and their values and their passion and what they have fun at doing. And so when we explore this competency, we try to make that connection. How can they express themselves more, be more passionate about what they're doing at work?
That's why this is a both-and model. You need high levels of self-awareness and self-management, but you're working in an interdependent reality. And you've got to recognize when people are not jazzed or juiced up. I mean, that's a key piece of social awareness. What's getting in the way? Maybe you got them in the wrong seat. And so getting them in a new seat may drive the achievement orientation to higher levels.
And it's important to recognize that it's completely natural. We all go through these periods of being in a rut, right? And that's completely normal. But it's how resilient are we to get out of that rut? And what are we doing to get out of that rut? Because let's go back to the definition of achievement orientation. The definition, when we feel like we're really hitting it out of the ballpark in achievement orientation, we're feeling a sense of fulfillment, we're feeling significant, and we're motivated. And those are really positive emotions that impact performance and how we're feeling about our everyday work.
But we couldn't possibly be feeling that all the time. There is no high without low, right? So we have to acknowledge that sometimes we're not hitting out of the park.
Yeah.
And be comfortable with that.
That's perfect. I think one of the things, it's a misconception, we may have talked about it in the first episode, is that they're not bad emotions. There are certain emotions that are positive and certain emotions that are negative. You know, sadness, anger, right? Happiness, passion, and to deny one is to deny the other. And it's important to recognize that we all feel a full range of emotions. We want to mitigate the negative, disruptive emotions that get in the way of performance. We want to enhance the ones that contribute to performance, but we cannot pretend that both do not exist.
How can someone tell when they're strengthening their achievement orientation?
Well, one of the ways that you can tell, Mark, is that people are more open to stepping outside of their comfort zone. They're willing to take some risks in low impact situations, and they're trying new things. They're embracing failure and looking at failure as a learning opportunity. They're willing to experiment with different behaviors in order to grow, learn, take their work to the next level. One of the stories that I really loved hearing a couple years ago was I was listening to an NPR show, and it was an interview with General Admiral Eric T. Olson. He was in charge of Navy SEAL training. And one of the things that he talked about is the recruits who didn't complete the training because they failed. They failed because they quit before the test that was coming up. So he called it, they failed forward. The ones who usually pushed through, even though they were sort of uncertain if they were going to make it to the end, usually made it to the end. And the ones who failed were the ones who quit before the test even happened. And so when you think about that as it relates to achievement orientation.
Give yourself the opportunities to succeed.
Yes.
By leaning into the feelings, even the negative emotions associated with failure or learning.
And even the possibility of failure.
So we've been talking here for a little while about this, Cindy. Let's kind of tie it up. How can you summarize achievement orientation?
So I would summarize achievement orientation this way, Mark. On a scale to 1 to 10, where would you put yourself? If you're low, consider how your work is disconnected from your values and passions and do something about it. If you're high, good for you, celebrate it, but pay attention how it might impact other people.
EI and You is produced by PLS. Executive producer, Ralph Simone. Research director, Cindy Massengill. Technical assistance provided by Matt Langley. I'm Mark Mangiacaro. For more information on emotional intelligence and other leadership development tools, visit discoverpls.com.